Hello and welcome back to CMO Convo, the show from CMO Alliance, where we dive into the big ideas shaping the marketing leaders of the future. We're joined by Mike Fenton, CMO of business insurance provider Superscript, and we're talking about the power and importance of branding for B2B, and why it's never too early to start thinking about it in a startup. Hi, Mike. Welcome to CMO Convo. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. How are you, Will?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. And I'm very excited about this conversation because we've been trying to get something on the books for a while. Like we've worked on stuff for the CMO Alliance last year, and I'm really glad we've managed to get together to have this conversation today. And I hope you're excited about it too.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I enjoy your podcast too, Will.
Oh, thank you. It's always nice to speak to a fan, of course. Yeah. So the audience knows who I am. Do you want to introduce yourselves to our audience, Mai, so we can get to know a bit about you before we get down to business?
Sure. So I'm Mai. I've had a very long career in retail, e-commerce, in consumer packaged goods as well, with more than 20 years of experience in strategic brand and digital marketing. I joined the company I work for now in summer 2019 when it was called Digital Risks, actually. And a year later, we were branded to Superscript, which is pretty cool. I think we're going to talk about that a fair bit. So my role is pretty broad. I look after brand and PR, growth marketing, including all the performance media and customer lifecycle management, and also the creative team, which sits in-house at Superscript. And so I've been there for 2.5 years now. We've seen fantastic growth in customer base, in revenue, but also in people. So it's really nice to see that when I joined, I was employee, I think I was probably number 20, something like that. There's over 100 of us now. Awesome. At Superscript. The team, the marketing team, has grown hugely as well from 3 people to 14 now. And we are about to embark on our Series B round of funding. So very exciting times at Superscript.
Definitely. And you've also recently, you were named our CMOs to watch list. And part of that was because of how much we like the branding at Superscript.
So flattered, I feel. Thank you so much. It was really unexpected, and I'm really pleased that you took notice of Superscript.
Well, it's because you built such a great brand, and that's what we're talking about today. And it's one of those ongoing conversations. Is a brand important to a B2B business? Mm-hmm. And I know you've talked about not being pigeonholed into a B2B category, and I think that's maybe why you've been such a driving force of building a great brand for Superscript. Like, was that something you were thinking about? Like, was like bringing sort of B2C tactics when it came to building the brand?
In a way, yes. So when I was approached to join Superscript and I realized it was a B2B brand, my first instinct was, oh, actually, that could be a little bit boring. But having met the founders and realized what they built to start with, but also how open-minded they were and how eager they were to actually allow their CMO to build a brand, really excited me. And I really saw an opportunity to bring a lot of the kind of B2C disciplines of brand marketing into a B2B business that also, you know, bearing in mind it's insurance, is perceived to be really boring, right? So I think that was actually one of the attractions of the role, I'd say. Leap of faith, and it's been a fantastic journey. When I joined, there was no talks of rebranding, by the way. It was Superscript, Digital Risks, but we quickly realized there was an opportunity to propel our growth through rebranding and removing that the niche aspect of the brand that Digital Risks conveyed, to open up, you know, as we were opening up to new trade, new products, etc., and also to international markets. So it's really refreshing, I think, to work with founders who understand the power of branding, and our CFO is the same. You know, I've had to really showcase why we needed to invest in our brand and in brand marketing, the ROI we'd get, and they understood very quickly. You know, they're not, sometimes you work with founders who are just after short-term results. It's all about demand gen, you know, tactical activity that will drive immediate response, immediate customer acquisition, whatever your KPI might be. But with Superscript, we think we're very good at balancing both, to be honest. It's really cool.
It's great to hear. It's really refreshing as well, because it is something we hear a lot with startup CMOs, that they are very much restricted. They've got their hands tied. They want to work on the brand. They want to build a strong brand, but the demands from the CEO, the demands from the head of sales is that demand gen needs to be, it's got to be attributional. It's got to be measurable in terms of how you're increasing revenue. And you can't always do that with a brand, but it does have many pros, having a strong brand from an early stage. Like, what it probably bears reiterating, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are very much team brand building kind of thing, but let's dig into, like, why is it important to have a strong brand, even in an early stage company?
Well, actually, it's even more important, I think, when you're a new brand, right? So Superscript, if you don't mind, I'll just explain a little bit what Superscript is about for listeners who are not familiar, because we're still very new on the market, but we are a UK-based insurance challenger brand, and we identify as a challenger brand because we exist to fix a problem that exists in small business insurance, right? It's a big segment of the business population, SMEs, but critically underserved, because insurance for small businesses is inadequate at the moment. You know, it is reliant on outdated coverage, generic and bundled products, very limited personalization, offline, paper-based, time-consuming. I mean, you know, you're thrilled. So that's because traditional insurers are bound to legacy technology, and they can't evolve, adapt to individual needs of SMEs. There's also great demand for flexibility for digital first experience. So we've come in because we believe that insurance should be easy, fair, and flexible. And so we've built our technology. We've built our own sort of machine learning, etc., to be able to provide flexible, customized business insurance specifically for SME. And that, I think, this is very, very special, right? But when you deal with a category like insurance or finance as a new brand, for a customer, you know, you have to put your big chunk of money into a business that you haven't necessarily heard about, that you can't relate to. So hence the importance of, from the outset, I think, building a very, very strong brand. And often for startups, it's left to the next stage. You know, let's focus first on, you know, driving some leads, and then next round of funding, let's think about, oh, you know, is that brand right? How can we build a stronger brand? But we started from the very beginning with that premise that we need a brand that is distinctive, that has strong values, and that resonates with our customers, and that conveys the right things with our customers. And I think it's got a lot of benefits, obviously, for the long term, right? So, you know, a strong brand means that it underpins financial value, right? It's an intangible asset that underpins financial value, but also it's brand equity, right? So you build distinctive brand assets, you build mental availability, it's strong brand equity, and the added benefit, I'd say, that is proven at Superscript is that a strong brand and brand marketing delivers greater efficiency of our performance media, so better productivity, so we convert better with our online ads, we get better quality of sales calls off the back of brand advertising, etc. So it's got a lot of benefit, and I think it should be thought about from the very beginning. It doesn't mean that you can invest in big brand awareness marketing. I know, I understand that, right? But I think startups should really spend time crafting their brand, their messaging, you know, their visual expression, their verbal expression from the beginning, so that when they have the capital to start pushing it out, you know, you can drive a strong, distinctive brand and recognition as well off the back of a very solid foundation.
And it gives your customers and your potential customers something to connect with emotionally. And we don't talk about enough in B2B that emotion does play a role. Like, we'd like to think, like, business to business means we can all be very, very clinical, very, very calculated.
That bothers me, you know, Will. But it is often what people tell me about. You know, B2B is so rational. You're dealing with the CFO. It's all based on product features, etc. I don't believe it. You know, the B2B buyers are human. They're people who also respond to certain emotional triggers. And there's a reason why we love brands as consumers that don't necessarily have a better product, right? Mm-hmm. So sportswear, for example, quality is probably quite similar, but you might prefer Nike, you might prefer Adidas. And it's because of that emotional connection and the associations that they've built. And I think the same applies to B2B. You know, yes, there's probably more thinking going into features and rational elements. But, you know, I think because B2B is also a long purchase cycle and, you know, at any one time, you've only got a small percentage of the market that is in of the audience that is in market to mm-hmm. buy, I think it's even more important to build that relationship, you know, over time, that recognition, that interest, that so that when they are in the market to buy, they think of you, right? Because they've seen you, they've related with you as a brand.
Definitely.
So I totally agree with you, Will.
Yeah. And I think it's also to do with how businesses change. When B2B marketing was first being thought of, it was in the days of like big corporations were who you were marketing to. Whereas like now there's a lot more entrepreneurs, there's a lot more startups, a lot more human-focused businesses. You're not marketing to a business. You might be marketing to a person who runs a business as their own thing. And they need mm-hmm. kind of like this emotional connection. They need mm-hmm. to be reassured by a strong brand. You can't just show like all these features and stuff at them. Like if they haven't heard of you, they're putting their livelihood on the line to invest in working with you. So having a strong brand gives that kind of reassurance before they even get into sort of like the buying phase. That recognition phase is so important for B2B. So there's probably a lot of people in early stage companies that think that, yeah, this sounds like a nice to have still, to have branding sorted out from an early stage. But it sounds to me that you're very much on the team that is a must have right from the outset. Yes. Is there a way to sort of dispel the myth that it's a nice to have, that you should be like focusing on brand right from the outset?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, if you want to drive sustainable growth, you've got to build a strong brand from the beginning. And it's you know, very important to craft it right, so that when you're able to invest in driving that broad reach awareness, actually it's identifiable and it's recognizable. And to be honest, well, there's no point in having a good product if you don't have an appealing brand that people can trust anyway. So in the early stages, yes, of course, you'll be spending a lot of time in optimizing your product, you know, ensuring product market fit, etc. I think at the same time, this is where you should also be optimizing your brand positioning, your visual expression, your building distinctive brand identity and assets, and a distinctive tone of voice, because they go hand in hand, right? It's and like I said, no point having a great product if you've got a brand that people just don't even notice, mm-hmm. right? And I think what a good brand can help you do as well is bring to life your purpose. Why you? I don't want to say it in a lofty way, but you know what? Why you exist and the problem yeah. you're trying to solve. And you know, with spending the right time in crafting that messaging, which for me is part of the brand, you can really get ahead of the competition. And it's not just about the product and the better features. Like we just talked, it's not about being differentiated. It's also about being distinctive. And I think some, just to borrow the terminology from Baron Sharp, not sure you've heard of him or have read How Brands Grow, that kind of thing. But I really like the way he referred to these as, you know, mental availability. And I think it's just encapsulates really what the purpose of a strong brand should be. So I think it's essential to brand growth as much as a great product is, and as much as the physical availability is. And in the early days, you should definitely spend time building this, getting this right. You know, get feedback from customers and optimize it over time, so that you know when you're able to go big and to scale, you've got very strong foundations. And we did that with Superscript, actually. You know, we spent quite a lot of time crafting a brand and messaging, a lot of time, and it's all in-house, right? And we then started testing the brand, you know, through small scale sort of radio tests, out of home tests, getting feedback from customers, because we do like some brand surveys off the back, and improving. And when we secured a big round of funding for a Series A, we were able to go big and actually to reap the rewards, because you know, we knew we had crafted a strong brand. We knew that it would work.
And it sounds like it's a really good unifying exercise for the organization as well. as well, sorry, working towards building a brand gives people alignment. It gives people direction on what you're about. Like, brand isn't just about the logo and like the colors behind the organization. It's the values. It's what you stand for as a company. And having that shared message has got to be a very, very powerful thing for an early stage startup. Definitely.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, actually, because I think brand and marketing is often seen as a, you know, to the end user communication or framework. But I think for me, it's so much bigger than that, right? It's a broad approach that guides a company's whole company's effort in achieving your goals internally and externally. It's a way of doing business, and it matters as much that you're marketing to an audience as you do to almost to your employees. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The way I see it, I want my target audience to be interested in the product, but I also want our employees to be proud of our brand, you know, and to want to advocate for it and to be to love it, to be happy to work for our business because they love our brand as much as we want our customers to. So it's interesting how marketing has evolved. Actually, it's got this, it's very multifaceted now. I think it's very multi-dimensional in so many ways, which I absolutely love, because I've been around a long time, and when I started, it was almost, you know, it was the cousin to the sales. It was talking at your customers, right, in the very early days. And now it's multifaceted. It's multiple audience, from your end users to your own employees to investors. It's as much about strategy as it is about great tactics, fantastic execution. It's about short term and long term, and it's evolved to be incorporating so much more data and tech and tools as well, and automation. It's so interesting.
Definitely,
how it's changing.
Yeah, it's a great time to be a marketer, definitely. And so part of that is to do with how quickly businesses are changing as well. So there's a big switch to working from home. Like, that's not just going to be a flash in the pandemic kind of thing. Like, there is going to be continued practices. It's going to be a lot of businesses running that way. And having a strong brand is going to be even more important in those situations. When you don't have everyone sitting in the same room together working towards the same goal, having that brand identity that you're all sitting under is going to be very, very important. You might not be in the same room. You might even be in the same country, but you're in the same company. You're under the same brand, and you're working together to make that brand stronger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it goes the same with externally as well. I think that's why branding has become so much more important in B2B now as well, because people are working differently. People are thinking about their work differently. They're thinking about the tools they use differently. I don't know if this affected you, Mai, but a couple of days ago, there was a big crisis with Slack going down all over the world.
Yes, that's affected us,
Yeah, and it felt like I had lost my arm not having access to that. Slack has become a major part of my life. I love the brand Slack. It's become very, very important to how I communicate with my team, with the rest of the company. It's my connection to the outside world, sitting in like my room doing my work every day. And that shows the power of a great brand. If it was just an office messaging system, I wouldn't have that connection to it. If it went down, it goes down. But Slack goes down, and oh no, that's a big problem.
We have a lot of debate around Slack. I think there's a bit of a love-hate relationship with Slack. I'm very dependent on love it as well. But people, they are haters because you become so dependable, don't you?
But to have that emotional connection with something that, like, maybe 20 years ago, you would have just seen as just part of, we didn't really have office messaging systems in the same way 20 years ago, but yeah, you just see it as like part of your computer. It'd just be like a little logo that you'd click on. Whereas like Slack, and the same with Zoom as well. Like, I think Zoom maybe has the advantage of the last couple of years really giving it a boost to turn it into a household name, but Zoom's become such a big part of conversation. It's like, oh yeah, I'll Zoom you and stuff like that. It's become,
you know, I can't wait until people will say I'm going to superscript it. You know, like, I'm going to Slack you, I'm going to Zoom you, and I'm going to superscript my business. It's actually a very interesting way to put it, right? You know, you've really you've brought this to life in an interesting way. You know, this is when you become really so much part of a way of life or a way to do business, right?
Like, work is what we do with most of our waking hours, so why shouldn't we love the tools that we use to do it? And I think that's the importance of branding in B2B, particularly in the B2B SaaS world. And I think there's a lot of great companies out there that have taken that to heart. So they're building communities now with their brands. A great example that comes to mind, I've talked about on the show before. I love them. I don't even use them, but I love the brand. It's Gong. I don't know if you're familiar with Gong, Mai, but they are they're a sales support platform based in the States, but they've gone with a very, very brand first right from the outset, and they've seen massive growth as a result. In fact, they had a Super Bowl ad. That shows the power of B2B branding now. The fact that we've got Super Bowl ads about B2B, about B2B companies. Is that something you're going to aim for with Superscript? Are we going to see a Superscript ad at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, why not? Maybe, you know.
You've been doing some interesting stuff with the brand. You've been doing like some sponsorship stuff on stuff that isn't naturally, you wouldn't immediately connect with business insurance.
Yeah, you put in that ad when you reached out for the CMO Alliance, CMO to watch. And I was really pleased, actually, that you took notice, because there's a few things that we've done that are really unexpected, I think, for an insurance brand. Is I think you mentioned the 100, the content, the great content activity that we run through ESPN. And I'm really, really proud of that one, because it had such a great impact on our brand perception amongst the ESPN audience of small business owners and people in the market for business insurance. We run a brand tracker, and literally every single metric was well above the norm that you would see for ESPN within the right audience for us as well, in terms of brand recall, brand affinity, etc. And you know, we did do a bit of work looking at, okay, you know, if you want to go after small business owners and managers and decision makers, etc., but we want to do it in a way that is not boring, that is an environment where there can be more, you know, relaxed and a bit more unexpected. And I was thinking about sports, obviously. We looked at YouGov data, TGI index data, etc. And cricket was a very natural choice. In fact, cricket and rugby, in fact, over-indexed a lot with this audience. But obviously, we don't have budget for big sponsorships. You know, we can't sponsor the Gallagher Premiership or the Premiership, the rugby Premiership. Should remove the name Gallagher. So it was a very, very, I'd like to say it's a very smart way to associate ourselves with the 100 through ESPN, who have great reach with amongst cricket lovers, partnering with cricket influencers, creating some great entertaining content, and get our name out there, because you see, you know, it's got millions of impressions through ESPN social channels, etc. And we'll definitely continue to work with ESPN, because it proved to deliver great, not just brand, but also traffic metrics, and more and commercial metrics off the back. So that's one that was a bit of a, you know, let's experiment, let's try that, let's see how it works. And it was surprisingly so successful. And then the other one that I think you mentioned to me as well was Unbound. Esports tournament, which was more of a, let's say, a sort of a B2B brand exercise, and kind of it was really about bringing the insurance community together in times of lockdown and do it for charity, and it probably ended up being bigger than what we thought it was going to be when we started off with this, and every year it was a second year it got. You know, bigger. We raised in total for charities £5,400, and we're gonna go even bigger next year. And I think this is great, because it sort of brings to life the way we disrupt things in insurance, but also the way we market Superscript, the way we engage with our audience, whether they are partners or insurance partners, whether they are end users with the 100. But I think generally our marketing is very different. You know, it is through these two activities I've just talked about. But if you look at our creative, whether it's the billboards that we run or display ads or social ads, they really grab your attention, but also in such a way that conveys what we do, what we're about, in the very succinct manner and memorable way. So again, we run a brand tracker, and we're able to see recall on different channels, whether it's our radio ads. I don't know if you came across that, for example. We're running at the moment on NBC, but again, they really, really stand out for being different. They catch you, grab your attention, you know, with a sign off, a very simple sign off. And again, radio ads have great recall, billboards, display. If every channel that we run actually has good brand recalls and drives some very positive shifts in brand perceptions, whether it's a brand for me, a brand that's innovative, etc. So I think, again, it goes back to branding and how it's important. You know, you could have a very strong media plan and get the best reach and frequency and CPM, the rest of it. But if your creative is not on brand or distinctive enough, it's kind of wasted, isn't it? The two have to work hand in hand. Very powerful creative with great media.
Yeah, you can't do out of home marketing with just a list of features. You need a brand, like you said. Like I don't know if it was confirmation bias, but I remember after I first spoke to you last year, and it seemed like I was seeing Superscript everywhere on buses, on the side of telephone boxes, on bus stops, and everything. And I'd be pointing out to my friends, like, spoken to the CMO of that. And, like,
yeah, and yet, you know, out of home has really worked for us, yeah. Actually. And yeah, it's a broad reach channel. And when we went out of home, we're not expecting like a direct uplift in quotes. That's not the point, right? It's really about making sure that all those people that are not in market right now that we could grab through search, right? So search channels, you know, they take notice, they know we exist, they understand what we do, and that we get their share of mind, really. So I'm going back to this mental availability, but that's why it's important to do that kind of stuff. And if you can afford it, to do it with a good level of frequency to stay top of mind, so that when these people are in market, that you know, they remember you for something really you know, really memorable. And actually I think our ads really are, because like you say, you know, the number of anecdotal feedback I have of I see you everywhere, but also we've seen that through what people are searching. So obviously direct searches direct sessions go up every time we do out of home, but also people can search in relation to the creative that we've been running. So it's true evidence that people have taken notice. So and like I mentioned, it's not just direct searches and brand searches that they're just growing incredibly, you know, month on month. It's the fact that we're improving the performance of our paid activity, thanks to the brand activity that we're running, which is why it should work. You know, that's the whole point, isn't it? So more people are more likely to click on our text ad on Google. People are more likely to click on our organic links, on our social ads. It's because we've become familiar, and familiarity is very important. You trust brands that you're more familiar with, aren't you? So it's great, I think. But the familiarity is built over time. You need consistent messaging, consistent creative, etc. So I think the mistake that some brands do is, you know, every campaign looks very different. Let's do this autumn, winter, let's change it. So we are very consistent in the way we kind of look every campaign that we run. And that allows us to gain that sort of, not just distinctiveness, but the brand association it becomes stronger and stronger campaign after campaign.
Definitely. And they sounded like when you were talking about the other stakeholders within Superscript, that they're all very, very on like team brand building exercises. And they've given you the support to do these kinds of out there activities with the marketing. But you still probably had to communicate them why you were doing these processes and stuff like that. Certain ways you framed it to make sure it was clear to them, like why this method could be effective, rather than just going pure demand gen?
Yeah, I'm lucky to have been around a long time, so I do have a lot of experience which I can draw upon, and you know, bringing example of case studies of how I've made it work before to give some comforting evidence that is the right approach to go with brand and performance and short term, I like to substantiate things with actual data and especially around commercial KPIs. So the way I've done it before is secured a test budget And so, for example, when we before we went big on radio, we ran a test just in London for a limited period of time, and we were able to measure the impact of radio versus the rest of the UK, and do a lot of modeling around that. And same for out of home as well. So it takes, you see, if you've got experience and good example to illustrate what you're trying to sell to your CEO and CFO, and if you're able to secure, it doesn't have to be a large budget, especially for radio, by the way. If you're able to do some tests and have some real evidence on what that means in terms of number of customers or revenue, or in our case, premium, gross written premium, it's just great, right? And then we've been able to scale all of these, and now SuperScript has very strong. Strong awareness, which we've been growing. We measure that quarter on quarter. Really strong. Very focused on London because we don't have yet enough funding to go full on and go big nationally. But we were getting some really, really good traction.
Let's just talk about how you're measuring the awareness. Like what kind of metrics are you using to measure brand awareness? Because that's often a very hard thing to communicate to key other stakeholders within business. Like what does it actually mean for someone to be aware of the brand? Like how do you actually show that metric's going up?
We run a brand tracker, so some maybe early stage companies won't have the budget to, but actually we run a brand tracker every quarter that measures spontaneous awareness, unprompted awareness, recall, purchase intent, etc. So I do have that data specifically, but to be honest, I think awareness is a bit of a maybe it's a bit of a vanity metric, and it's good to have for investors and the board, etc. Things like NPS, right? But what really matters, I guess, it's are we driving more people to website? Are we getting more people to start a quote? Are we converting more people, etc.? And so we measure that through site sessions, especially direct traffic, brand search impressions, ads click-through rate, etc. And that's far more meaningful. I think if I wasn't running the brand tracker, I would still get our CEO and CFO on board, because they probably would care more about the more substantial metrics that eventually translate in increase in net customer base, increase in net premium.
Of course. I mean, that's what they want to see at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think it impacts loyalty as well. It's interesting, when we run awareness advertising, we have seen spikes in customer referrals as well. So which means, it's the brand I'm proud of, actually, and I'm going to talk about it more, and I'm going to refer it more. So there's so many real benefits that aren't just vanity metrics of awareness, in my opinion, and that we certainly as SuperScript we can demonstrate through our data. I mean, we track everything, we're a tech and data business, so
that goes back to what we were saying before, that you can't have your customers being advocates for your brand if you don't have a brand at the end of the day. And they want a brand that they're proud of to show to their colleagues and friends as something they're an advocate for. And having a good brand, a good, nice, attractive brand is step one to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for B2B as well, the same way that you are, I can see you're so passionate about Slack, right? And you could probably describe Slack, if you can describe Slack as a more than just a logo or word, it's amazing. You talk so passionately about it. But yeah, it's definitely more than a messaging app for you.
It is. And I think that's something that we all need to be thinking about in the B2B space, is how do we make our products and offerings more than just the products and the offerings? How do we connect emotionally with people? And step one to that, at least in my mind, is building a strong brand. I think that's something you agree with, right, Mai?
Yeah.
Awesome. So to sum things up, let's say what is the golden rule of early stage branding? Like what is step one that people should be thinking about in terms of developing a strong brand for an early stage company?
So I think early stage would be try to be very clear about who you are and what you stand for, so that you can translate that into a brand in terms of its the tone, the visual and verbal. I think often the verbal tone gets forgotten about. It's people think that brand is just like a visual thing, but you can translate that into a visual and verbal unique identity, and also strong messagings that really reflect what you're about and what you exist. And I think it's important to get this right, because everything that you do, you know, brand, product, offering, etc., we'll step from that. And then start to build that, spend time. I'd say if you don't have money yet to go out with advertising, I would recommend that you do spend time on your website experience, and your customer contact channels as well. You know, get your chat messaging, your intercom right, for example. Mm-hmm. So we use intercom at Superscript, and actually we don't use the default sort of messaging template. We actually spend quite a lot of time crafting the messaging on, mm-hmm. on intercom, and same for all customer communications, I think, because, you know, let's not forget that the customer facing teams from sales and customer success are your brand as well in the eyes of the customer. So that doesn't cost money, just time, you know, making sure that this is right. The website UX right. I think if you don't have a huge budget to spend on paid media, I would say that your content and SEO would be key areas of focus for an early stage startup, you know, and your presence on social as well, which really can embody your brand really well. We've done that at Superscript. Actually, we in the early days it was all about content, mm-hmm. SEO, social media, and then when we started to close a bit more funding, we knew we could accelerate our growth by injecting more into a pay-per-click search, for example. But actually, content also allows you to not just to present your brand in the right way, but also to attract customers at different stages of the funnel. That's the beauty of content versus, mm-hmm. like some of the maybe the paid search channels, where, you know, depending on what stage of the journey you are, you might just be evaluating your options, or you might not even know what insurance cover you need actually, but with the right content you could encourage your brand discovery at different stages of the funnel. So a bit of marketing jargon. I think one of the things that's worked well with us as well is partnerships. So whether they're distribution partnerships like we have with Starling Bank, Revolut, or Amazon Business Prime, for example, again, they're a good way to drive brand associations with potentially a bigger brand, and to be in the right place, right time for the audience, right? So it's August. It's another form of physical availability, right? The same way that your Google search rankings are, is being found where customers most need you. So we've got partnerships with QuickBooks, for example, and Amazon Business Prime, and so on. And that's also a very good way to. In fact, it builds your brand as well, right? You know, partnerships are two-way things, and it benefits you as well. So you need to find the right partnership. Some can be brand partnerships, not distribution-led. But again, with the right property, you can actually really enhance what you're about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So great advice, Mai. Thank you very much for speaking to me today. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I love talking about branding. I know you love talking about branding. And
I love chatting to you, Will, every time.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. And I'm sure our audience has enjoyed it as well. Branding, it's everything we do as a CMO, as CMOs, as marketers. Branding's at the core of everything. So really great conversation today. Thank you very much, Mai. Thank you to our listeners. And we'll be back soon with another CMO Convo.
Thanks so much for having me, Will.